So the deal here is everybody gets 5 minutes. It's not a huge crowd, so I'll be a little bit lenient. If you start to hear the ukulele, that means your time is coming to an end, and wrap it up at a place that makes sense, or let us know, oh, this only has a few stanzas left, or I only have two more chapters of my novel to share with you. And I wanted to start with a poem that comes to me, whether I like it or not, and it comes to me in a song, but I'm not going to sing it for you, because I'm generous. But this is hope. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest lands and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. Thank you. Next, our first reader is Peter Parsons.
Thank you. Thank you. Peace. This is from the oral history that Peter Anastas and I did in 1973 for the 350th anniversary of the city. Went through two printings very rapidly. And what we did it for was to really encourage people to record and listen to what was still around of the experience of real Gloucester people and their contributions to our history. So this is Joe Sheehan, the way he introduces himself. He was on his deathbed, actually, when I recorded this. I wore my boots for years and years. I was a lumper, worked on the wharf and everything. Smelled out loud, gurry. Years ago, they didn't hire so many lumpers, only a few. The crew took out their own fish, and they just picked up anybody, only a few. What you call lumpers them days used to clean boats off and take what they call ballast out of the boats, pig iron. They took pig iron out. He and his family miraculously survived the influenza epidemic, and he had many, many adventures, not the least of which was to be an organizer like Woody Guthrie for the IWW, the International Workers of the World, a wobbly, and he had incredible adventures doing that, but always came back to Gloucester and worked on the wharf. This is his summation. One of the dreams I had when I was sick in the hospital there, I dreamt I was walking to the road, dirt road, all trees left back. I had a gun in my hand, rifle. I had a pistol strap. Seemed like 200 years ago it was, and this door opened up in this big log building, and these old people come out, and they call me in. They talk like Quakers, you know, like old-fashioned talk. So plain, you know. I got 31 miles to go, I said. I'm going along. I didn't know who I was. I had no feelings, nothing. Like a robber, you know. This log cabin. Old-fashioned place. Cooked meals, everything. Old people looked at my hand, says, "You don't need that. We want you here." I said, "Well, I intend to go up. I got 30 miles to go, and I want to make it." "Where are you going to stay?" On the side of the road, I had a blanket with me. I said, "I don't know what I'm going to do here." "Well, there's 1,000 acres of land here. You can run it, and you can do some good." They had an old-fashioned thing to take a bath in, too, and a wooden trough. So when I come to the next morning, this black man was there. I says, "Hand me my gun back." He says, "I'm going along." He says, "You got no gun," I says. "I was talking to an old couple last night. I slept here," I says. "I had a gun when I first came in here. I don't know what I wanted it for. I had no idea what I was carrying it for, even, you know." I didn't feel nothing, no feeling of fear, no nothing. He said, "I want you here." So I says, "I don't know, what am I good for?" I says, "I was going up to the road." So I says, "All right, I'll stay here. There's 1,000 acres of land, you can run it," he says. "What do you mean?" he says. Well, we need this place by and by. First thing, this wagon stopped outside. The old wagons like they had years ago. This man brought his girl in there. I want to know, can you keep this girl? She's sick. So he looked at me and the black man. I says, "All that there's here is some Indians out there someplace, and me and this man here, Tom," I say, he call himself. I says, I just come, I don't know nothing about anything. But you know, but you want to leave her here, I says? You can't go over the road. You better leave somebody with her. I don't know who's going to take care of her, but she's welcome to stay here. Tom says, you're in charge, he says. Now you know. Then after that, there were soldiers come in there, wounded soldiers come in there, and everything. And Tom's got some kind of stuff. He's a vegetarian. Just beans, you know, made of vegetarian stuff. And he found a way to take their legs off when they's mangled without any pain. And there's all kinds of nationalities coming in there. So they turn around and says to me, we're going to bring a load of hogs for you to butcher. I says, wait a minute, I says. I'll see no killing going on here, I says. Once anybody steps in here, I says, I don't want no killing. Animals nor men, either one, I says. I'll get the hell out. That's the only thing I got mad. I don't want nothing, I said. We could live well with what we got. So we had cows for milk and eggs and things. You ought to see the soldiers come in. All Civil War soldiers and Chinese and everything come in there. And no one bothered us. The Indians was up there. A lot of horses was around. So I thought, geez, I got to do something here. What am I doing here? So I says, why can't you give those men hot flapjacks? He says, we can't. We only got that oven too. I says, put a big piece of iron over there and get 20 guys, I says. Anybody can turn out, mix up the dough and get them hot. They're no good cold, and give them hot coffee and stuff. And then I told the guys taking care of the wounded there, put some more hay in there for the wagon. More hay, ease the wounded up, soften it over the road. So he says, you know, you do know something after all, he says. No, I don't know nothing. And it seems to me it was all so plain, like I was Johnny Appleseed. I can remember this guy talking, he does it better than I do. Seemed so plain to me, something seemed it was true. Took me to the woods, all blueberries around. Then he showed me apples in bloom, beautiful. Then I says, how are the Indians? Then I looked along side of me, bears along the side of me. I says, them animals, won't they hurt you? He says, no, not so long as they're well fed. Plenty for everybody, he says. Then coming here, there was all kinds of people. When they got in there, there was no trouble. I says, first thing we'll do, I says, is take the money away from them. Keep it from them. Cause once they get money, they'll want to gamble, cause trouble, I says. We don't want that. We don't want trouble around this place. Take their money, take their uniforms, forget about the war, I says. Give the guns back. One guy thought he was trying to escape after a long while. He had wooden legs, so he was out there. There's a lot of horses. He tried to get himself a horse. I says, wait a minute, my friend. You don't have to try and escape. You're not a prisoner here. Anytime you want to go, go. I'll give you your belongings back. He says, no, I just want to see if I can get up on a horse with my one leg. I said, I won't guarantee your safety, but after a while, we get enough together, we send them out in a bunch, I says. You want to go home? I says, you want to go anywhere? You go. Funny dream. Everybody happy there. Nobody fought each other, and it seems so good. So true. Nobody hated each other. There's all kinds of people. All kinds of nationalities there, and they seem to want to try to do something, you know. All one world, you know. When you hate somebody, you're sick yourself. If you come along, you like somebody, you're happy. That's why I don't want to classify myself as anything, because I want to see people get together. Of course, Since the world begun, there's been cruelty. You can't blame one nationality. Wars going on since the world began. See, when I was down in Washington, I met some of these amputees from Vietnam. Sad sight, in the wheelchairs, everything. Young people. Talking to them ain't so bad. I'm 68 years old. I'm passed off. Seen my life. These fellas is 20, 21 years old like that. They was against the war. I'm not against any soldier of any nation. I'm not against my country. Somebody invade these shores, I say, I'll take up a gun and go try to fight him off. But I says, I don't like the war itself. The soldier I respect. He goes, he fights, and when he comes back, he should get decent treatment. But it seems like you can't get fair wars. I wanted to tell a straight story, but not hurt anybody. See? Joe Sheehan.
Next, we have Dick.
I have a couple of children's books that I've written, and I'm just going to read some silly prose from them. Actually, I have a couple of copies, and I've illustrated them. I can hand them around. Put one over here and one over here.
Look at the pictures.
So I'm just going to read them at random. The name of the book is A Nearly Fractured Tale, and I got the idea from an author who I really admire, and he used to do a series called Amelia Bedelia. Some of you probably know of that, but he was an illustrator. His name was Wally Tripp, and he's just recently passed, but I used to read a lot of books from Wally Tripp to my children, and I went to my daughter 30 years after I wrote them, or after I read them to her, and I asked her if she remembered the book, and I explained the name of the book was A Great Big Ugly Man Came Up and Tied His Horse to Me. And she said, I eat my peas with honey. I've done it all my life. They do taste kind of funny, but it keeps them on the knife. And I thought, after 30 years, if it's that memorable, that's the kind of format that I wanted to follow. So anyways, let's just get started on a couple of them here. The first one is a picture of a worm. I almost hate admitting such, but boy, do I love books. Some friends of mine just roll their eyes or give me dirty looks. It took some time for my degree, though now I hardly squirm. The complaint I hear, which isn't one, is when I'm called bookworm. And a mouse is saying, I just stopped by to say goodbye to you. We've had a lot of fun. I didn't think you'd act like this. Now look at what you've done. The light and fan are such a mess. You ruined your nice skirt. I'm some surprised to see you spooked. I'm glad no one was hurt. I never meant to frighten you. No lesson here was learned. I hope you can forgive me, so someday I might return. A third one. Sometimes I like to get away, spend it all alone. Got my solar-powered charger in case I need my phone. You'd likely find me down the river, at least that's what I'm wishing. Midstream, all loaded up with gear, smiling, and a fishing. Now, fishing is spelled with a P in front of it. And he's got a computer. It's the modern day. The next one. This actually came from my wife, who was having dental work done, and so she drank tea through a straw, and one morning I said, oh, I said, I gotta do something on that one. So, my wife really likes her tea. She drinks it through a straw. If one ponders why, I'd say, it's not the strangest thing I saw. To tell the truth, tea from a cup is not what I'd call trouble. Her reasoning for the straw she'd choose is mostly blowing bubbles. Every kid can relate to that. The next one. I once met a real nice fellow. I didn't know it at the time, his suitcase tied up with a rope, when I realized he was blind. He had hopes to find some work, do whatever he was able. A place to rest his weary bones, a meal upon his table. I wanted to join him then and make his darkness bright, fetch his cane, watch his steps, and guard him through his night. He thanked me, but then let me go, never mentioning his burden, for taking care to trust himself was what he knew for certain. I usually forego house calls, not meaning here to gloat, but Jeffrey here, a friend of mine, has a problem with his throat. And this, he's an MD. I don't know if you can see that. I don't think tonsillitis is closer now to strep. While working from a ladder, I've got to watch my step. There's a risk that my medicine might cost me my career, while one wrong move when trying to help might knock me on my rear. As long as I am careful, we'll bring this to an end. I need to help if possible, especially for a friend. This is the next one. My favorite game is baseball. I really love to pitch. My coach said, try something else. I told him, I'll not switch. And this is the cover. I've worked like this real hard, you see, all my natural life. Bit trees in half, done stupid things. Why even ask my wife? Some friends have wondered to my... Let me start that sentence again. Some friends have wondered to my surprise why I look so pale. I tell them all I suffered, a nearly fractured tail. How silly what some folks will say, some stuff I find absurd. This talk of being swished away, can't believe that junk I've heard. I'll not listen to what they cry, nor will I take heed. A winged creature from the sky, such rubber show indeed. I can't believe they think it's true, I've got too much I have to do. If you must believe it's true, then just leave, be on your way. I've got too much to do today, I don't... That's the end of that.
Good stuff.
This is the next one. I don't know if you can see that.
Okay.
I like it on the water. I go out just for fun. I need to rent two boats next time. There's barely room for one. This one is depicted underwater. This nice young man came by today and claimed we both were winners. First prize, he said, though not real clear, was going out for dinner. You can see he's got a winner, like a blue ribbon down there. Didn't come out blue, though.
This is a really big departure from what you've heard so far. I'll give you a couple of spoiler alerts. It's going to be loud, and there's profanity.
Strobe lights?
Well, maybe if you brought some, but I didn't bring them with me. So I've never really written anything like this before, and it was a lot of fun. So, here we go.
Hold tight.
Oh. See, even they know how... Even they know to be scared. I have this syndrome. Maybe you didn't know. It's not Tourette's, but my tics are real. They erupt from me like cop in a feel. I can't stop saying. I just can't stop. Fuck! Diagnosis, trumpets. A peculiar disorder of the mind. It moved on me like shingles. Puts my mind in a bind. This is a rant to you, 45. You spewing hate and burying justice alive. We're back on our feet and we're bringing the heat. Your sins are more than I can bear. I just want to throw up all over your hair. Orange is the new impeach. Our voices will bury you over on Coffin Beach. Housing for nobody. While mansions rise and you in the counting house with the devil fucking eyes. Tax cuts for the rich were done with your lies. Brown shit water. How about your daughter? Ivanka's Flint Martini? she should try it in her teeny weeny red bikini. Water, water everywhere. But why should we care? Tremendous amounts of water. A lot of water. An amazing amount of water. Our island, our people, Puerto Rico, my heart, Puerto Rico, mi corazón. Pope the mother, and she will roar with hurricanes, typhoons, floods, and more. The fire next time is now. Asshole, you get the first bow. Mount your horses, Vladimir. Pussy Riot, bring up the rear. The world is watching. The world is watching. Your reign is built on fear. Borders are for collies, not babies clutching dollies. You heartless son of a bitch. My sisters and I, we're digging a ditch. No such thing as collusion, just an illusion. Yesterday, the elevator opened to a transfusion. Women with survivor voices. Mr. Flake, you got choices. Keep my vagina out of South Carolina. We won't go back to hangers in a shack. Our legs are spread wide for the truth to reside. No mansplaining, no lies up here on this side. I moved on her like a bitch. I got a sexual itch. I moved on her very heavily. I just started kissing. You can do anything. But it's your turn now, Mr. Trump. Lay your balls right here on this stump. A chicken neck worth a lot more than that gold-plated black at your core. Listen up, Mr. Prez, to the likes of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Next to her, your lying orange grows pale. Move over, asshole. The future is female. That's it. Woo! Thank you. It's been circulating.
Yeah, but, you know, that Flake was just yesterday.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I plugged that in.
Oh, you did. Edited.
It's kind of an obsessive way of writing, you know, because it just kind of, because of the cadence.
I hope you read that on Monday.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll get Safatia to read it, maybe she'll. I do have one other piece. Can I read one other very short? That I did not write, but you will all recognize. It's written by Judy Chicago, and it kind of balances out a little bit the first piece.
Thank you. We guys appreciate that.
And then all that has divided us will merge. And then compassion will be wedded to power. And then softness will come to a world that is harsh and unkind. And then both men and women will be gentle. And then both women and men will be strong. And then no person will be subject to another's will. And then all will be rich and free and varied. And then the greed of some will give away to the needs of many. And then all will share equally in the earth's abundance. And then all will care for the sick and the weak and the old. And then all will nourish the young. And then all will cherish life's creatures. And then all will live in harmony with each other in the earth. And then everywhere will be called Eden once again. Thank you.
That was from Judy Chicago. Yeah. Next we have Rona. I think I'm going to pass.
Rona's
going to
Rona.
We have Georgelina. We'll harass Rona later.
Yeah.
In a pleasant, non-sexual way.
Encouraging Lena. This is an excerpt from a larger piece called Advocate from the time my mother was in the nursing home. My mother was a resident at the Alzheimer's unit of a nursing home for several years. This was a good nursing home. The staff worked very hard. Having said that, I felt there were levels of care that they were unable to provide. What follows is only my personal perspective. Someone else's may be different. At the nursing home, there were signs on the walls that read, "Don't be afraid to speak up." And so I spoke up, and I got myself into deep trouble. For besides advocating strongly for my mother, I would report to social services what I experienced as residents being neglected. The backlash for speaking up was brutal. It was literally crazy-making, for the signs invited to speak up, but the staff wanted me silent. 4 years after my mother's passing, in session with my therapist, she said, "You were very open to the residents. You could see beyond their insanity. You could see their personhood. You were feeling empathy towards the residents, and the nursing home's response indicated that there was something wrong with you. You were shamed. You were shamed for being loving and caring," my therapist said. "I was shamed for being loving and caring. My very essence was made wrong. I had responded with compassion to those who suffer. I knew in my gut that I hadn't done anything wrong, and yet the message I was hearing was, what you think is right is wrong. Gaslighting, a method of psychological torture. No wonder I was feeling I was going insane. One day at lunchtime, I met Bonnie. She was seated at my mother's table. Bonnie was 100 years old, small, emaciated. She had collapsed on the dining room table. "Miss, please take me to my room. Take me to my room," she'd begged me time and time again, day after day after day. "I can't, Bonnie. I'm so sorry. I cannot take you to your room," I'd reply, for I knew it was against the regulations. "Take me to my room, take me to my room," Bonnie kept begging. And one day I couldn't take it anymore, and I reported it to Mary, social worker. "There are reasons why Bonnie is not being taken to her room," Mary said. "Oh, I'm sure there are, probably some regulation. Bonnie knows that she wants to rest. Aren't her rights being violated?" I said. "You're talking about normal people, Georgelina. Bonnie has dementia. She told me she was so tired she couldn't breathe," I said. "And you believed her," Mary said. "Yes, Bonnie, I believed you. You told me you were tired, and I believed you. And you kept saying, 'Please take me to my room,' and my heart broke for you time after time, because I couldn't take you to your room, and they kept you waiting and waiting and waiting. And I spoke up for you, Bonnie. Many times I said, 'Bonnie is tired. She wants to go to her room.' And for that, I'm being crucified. And as they kept you waiting, I leaned over you and held you, for you were so tired you couldn't breathe. And you were so tired you could barely whisper to me how tired you were. And because I leaned over you, because I held you wanting to give you comfort, because your cramped up arm, all skin and bone, reached out to me, I am being crucified. And I told you, 'I'm fighting for you, Bonnie.' And you smile at me with your toothless smile, and I smile at you looking into your only eye, and we connected, for I saw intelligence there, intelligence and strength and beauty. And I said, 'I've told them, Bonnie. I've told them you are tired. What are we going to do now?' 'We wait,' you said. And you took my hand and kissed it. Bonnie, oh Bonnie, how I have fought for you. Bonnie has dementia, but she still knows that she's tired. She still knows that she wants to rest. Bonnie has dementia, but she's still capable of smiling, connecting, receiving love and loving back. Bonnie has dementia, but she's still a human being who still has thoughts and feelings, a human being that still deserves to be listened to and responded to." After that day, when I leaned over Bonnie and held her, I never saw her again. Was she kept in bed so that she could rest? Had her wishes finally been heard? And that I will never know. With my therapist, she said, "This society punishes those who show empathy. You are not supposed to care too much," she added. And God said, "Ignore society. ignore society, keep caring, keep caring. They wanted me silent, and I wonder, who will speak up for those who can't speak up when those who do speak up are silent? Are silenced. I'll read that again. Who will speak up for those who can't speak up when those who do speak up are silenced? Not that I will ever be silent.
Hi, it's great as always to be in Vincent's home again. Those of you who knew Vincent knew how, and he used this word a lot, I remember him using the word a lot, smitten, how smitten he was with the beauty of Cape Ann. And I would like to read his poem by Vincent. That is sort of his, a love prayer to the beauty of Cape Ann. It's from 10 Pound Light, published in 1975. A, as the ocean never seen 2 days. B, when first I laid eyes on thee and thine, my heart's glow took in cod, hake, flounder, mackerel, heavens, dear granite glances, whippoorwill iris, branched backbones and adoring instincts. Going in any direction, siphoning the lore and returning it, holy the hills, holy the sea, holy the air, all is manna and innocence spacing time. Seeing on grave markers as canoes, bronzed faces do, with second sight, the first is wrought of, I, a singing once inhabited, guiding galactic energies. I'd like to give a shout out with this poem to everybody who works toward the preservation of this beautiful Cape Ann. Thanks.
Hello.
Hello.
I saw the description of this event and had me thinking after watching news over the last couple of days. We seem to live in a very divided time. Men and women, black and white, red and blue, citizen and immigrant. If we think back, if we think about the past, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the world was much more tribal, much more nationalistic, segregated, hateful. So it seems like there's two processes. One, building this new world that's more closely integrated, and the other, which sometimes seems more powerful, but is really tearing itself apart, clearing away all of those tendencies that divide us. My personal experience has allowed me to live in three different, very different communities since leaving my childhood home. I started my teaching career in the mountains of Appalachia in a very small town. My house down in the valley, surrounded by hills. So that's where I'd like you to picture yourself for this poem, is on a back porch, looking. Been sitting here on my back porch, looking up at this hill that rises up against the sky, so quiet, dark, and still. Just thinking about the bigness of the world gives me a thrill. Dreaming of far-off places, places I've never seen and maybe never will. Just think. There are people on the other side, alive this very day. Men at work, girls in love, and children hard at play. And probably folks on their back porch, same's me, I'd have to say. And though I've never met these folks, we're neighbors in a way. See, that big old world's just the other side of this hill that seems so high. And those far-off foreign places lie beneath the same blue sky. And those far-off foreign people ain't so different from you and I. If only we'd meet 'em face to face and greet 'em eye to eye. So someday, God willing, I'll get over that hill just to see what I can see and sit perhaps on their back porch and sip on their kind of tea. Just to see what kind of neighbors these foreign folks might be, and perhaps God willing to show 'em the good neighbor they'd find in me. And as we'd sit and talk about this and that and so, I think our differences would fade away and our likenesses would show. If we'd just sit on a porch and chat about this and that and so, I think we'd come to know we're all the same on this big old world. Same sun above, same earth below. Well, as I'd sit on that back porch, I suppose that I might find that looking back from the other side of the mountain would bring to mind this back porch where I'm sitting now and the good folks I'd left behind, my friends and family that have taught me this love for all mankind. My friends and family, I'll miss 'em, sure, each and every one. But love wasn't meant to sit still on the spot where it begun. So I'm headed off for broader horizons, across the mountain and beyond, to meet my many neighbors, and to know we all are one. So after teaching in Millboro for a dozen years, I had the opportunity to live in Brazil and teach in Brazil for another decade before coming here to Gloucester. So this one was based on that experience of living among those neighbors, those new neighbors. How can there be so many trees for which I know no name? So many shapes and colors, so different from where I came. Such strange trees, and yet I know they're just trees all the same. And the birds, my God, you should see the birds. They're the greenest, most peculiar things. This one they call the toucan's got a beak as long as its wings. But the bird I heard just the other night sings just like the whippoorwill sings. And if I look up to the constellations, I can see a whole new hemisphere, a whole new half of the universe you can only see from down here. But over the northern horizon, the familiar stars I see make my far-off friends on this little globe seem relatively near. Everything here, I have to admit, seems peculiar and strange and new. And the people have such funny ways, so different from what I usually do. But you know, once you get to know 'em, they're no more different than me and you. They're just so many different folks for whom I once knew no name. Just so many shapes and colors, so different from where I came. Yes, such strange folks, and yet I know we're just folks all the same. So I'll leave it at that.
Here he comes. Good afternoon, everyone. I think Vincent would like what was happening in his house today. For me, poetry brings back the dead, so I'm going to bring back Vince in this poem here. Because the dead have a lot to say to us, yeah. This is in Vincent's selected poems. It's called July 4th, 1776, Sign of Interdependencies. The intimate is a syringe. Rape is cool. Crooked money is lauded. Forsaken by religion, Congress, and the Declaration of the Calendar. One's own reality unowed, a father and a mother chosen by a child. To work the father and mother chosen by the child to work the one out of and themselves out of it. The proverbs of justice are a scratched recording. No box office to this mad theater. A people lost in space, lacking imagination, but for the broken bread and the spilled wine. Mine the universe. I'll be back in the next millennium. We're at the threshold. Hold fast is in charge. The birth of a poem is not enough. A birth of the wheel of day and night, no boundaries. The crabs everywhere, shallow water is. There are other dimensions. Give up the pit bull strategies. Such traumas are terra tango. Sensitivities are the bread and wine of a civilization. Perceptions for changing. Special effects are a sideshow and go begging us, the United States of the Earth, for healing the planet. The anthem of the ocean, by the ocean, for the ocean. Pisces, the twins of evolution and revolution. The balls. So there's Vince. Thank you for everyone being here.
Rona, do you believe in second chances?
No,
I'm just kidding. I'm just harassing you, as I said I would.
It's okay.
I'm really excited to see Don and Rose show up because we've just finished all the people who signed up to read poetry, and I think we're ready for a song. Or
Don got here first.
Sure.
Oh, Jim.
I'm late.
You're late.
I was sleeping.
And now you're awake.
It was a nice deep sleep. I felt like I was going to go right through the winter.
Well, here's a question.
That's why I have my quilted coat on.
Should we do some songs and then poems, or
whatever
all
you
the
want.
Poetry and then all the songs?
Poetry.
Jim Reed.
Okay, we're going all poetry, then all songs.
Okay. I have a song, so I'll wait.
Well,
no, your turn.
You want to flip for it? This won't take long.
They all said today.
Thank you, Vincent.
And if you want, you can use this.
This is okay. This is okay.
I'm going to need it.
Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. I got to put my glasses on. I can't see a damn thing. Excuse me. There we go. Watching Blasey Ford, I get dizzy, feel strange, go to easy chair, roomy, bird song, sleep. I awake to new friend, Christine, still on the screen. I flood with memory of the people from my time, while subsurface rages where details bounce after his ministerial laying on me 60 years ago, and he said, I don't remember. That's it.
Well, maybe I will. Good.
All right.
There you go.
You just gave me courage, my friend.
Glad to hear.
So, Barbara asked me to write a sermon, which I didn't do because I am completely tongue-tied and very happy not to be preaching tomorrow because I do not have a polite word left in my body at this point. But then this morning I found this thing that I really want to share with somebody, and this feels like a group of friends, so I hope that you will pardon the very, very bad language and the violence. And this is not written by me. It's written by a woman named Katie Kate Kate. I'm famously not a crier. I didn't even cry in Manchester by the Sea, but I cried a little bit this morning reading this. So here we go. You could say we're pissed. This post is to help the people who aren't feeling the feelings. Hey, the last few days have probably been pretty trippy for you, huh? Everyone around you looks like they got the flu at a funeral. The women in your life have been meaningfully silent, glued to their monitors, sequestered with their earbuds. Someone cried. Someone called in sick. She keeps grinding her teeth. Something's going around. Maybe it doesn't make sense to you why the women are taking this so hard. I mean, you'd get why we'd be pissed, but this seems excessive. Allow me to explain. Yeah, you could say we're pissed. Although pissed feels a little far over on the peeved side of the rage spectrum, to be fully accurate, I'd say many of us are enraged, like biblically, in a way that feels ancient and eternal, possibly even like a supernatural portal to infinite, bubbling, righteous fury. We are incandescent. We are roaring. We feel dangerous. It is a rush and a panic to recognize that we feel an urge for physical violence and destruction. We wish a motherfucker would. We want to hurt people. Having been hurt ourselves, this feeling scares us even as it comforts us, the way you might feel if you put a loaded gun in the bedside dresser. I confess, I've been luxuriating in wildly satisfying fantasies of violence against these men. I want Lindsey Graham to do the Game of Thrones naked shame walk for 40 days and 40 nights through densely populated areas while he recites his unhinged monologue from the hearing on loop. I want him to know how it feels to be the smallest voice in a crowd that fucking hates you and will scream you into silence or turn their backs on you as if you could not, even in your spectacular shame, make any impact whatsoever on their day. I want to pepper spray Chuck Grassley right in the asshole. Yeah, I said it. I have a can of bear spray that I want to shove straight up his pooper. I want him to be embarrassed about the nature of his pain. I want to punch Orrin Hatch in the throat every time he tries to talk. I want him to feel like what it's like to stop yourself before you speak, to weigh if it's going to be worth the pain. I want to stuff Brett Kavanaugh into a medium-sized dog crate full of greasy black Brooklyn train track rats that haven't eaten in a week. I want him to feel a tiny thousand nibbles on his skin. I want him to panic. I will let him out when he says he's sorry for being one of those fucking rats. I would never do any of those things, but it feels good to imagine having the power over these men. It feels good to imagine my power until I remember that my power is imaginary. Anger is a useful emotion for people who are in unbearable pain. And please understand, although if you don't, you won't be able to, it's not the kind of thing you can imagine, that it is painful to try to convince someone that you matter. Please care about me is a hard argument to make without shame.
because the fact that you're making it means two things are true. They don't care about you, and you do care about them. It's hard not to feel alone when you beg the people who write your laws to care about you, and they close the elevator door. It's safer to say, fuck you, than please don't hurt me anymore. Fuck you means nobody cares. It hurts to be the unmet hand. You never really know when someone's going to slap you. You never know when to stop reaching out. We are pissed and we're afraid. The spectacle of anger we saw in Brett Kavanaugh scares us on an animal level. Most of us have spent our lives monitoring our faces, softening our voices, and contorting ourselves into pleasing shapes in order to avoid ever being in a room with that man, yelling from his red, twisted face. I wanted to run from him and hide, and I wanted to run to him and soothe him. You could call it pissed. The primordial lava flow of rage that flowed through me when I felt the untrustworthy impulse to comfort an angry man who will write laws about my body. It made me angrier that you felt sure we would be fine with his belligerence, that you were surprised anyone believed the woman. It made me furious when you expressed annoyance at our insistence that she be heard. Who do we think we are asking questions? Who in the hell do we think we are wanting answers? And after you already let us ask the questions, cheese and crackers, how greedy can we be? We are pissed, and we are grieving. We revisit the moments that divide our lives into before and after. We remember there was a before. We loved the girls we were. And it hurts to know they were hurt. We look at our friends. We look at our children. We look at our grandparents. We love the girls they were, too. It hurts every time someone we love remarks on the admirable accomplishment of a man who hates women. We grieve that you do that. We grieve for the death of our trust in you. Our untrustworthy impulses will remind us to confide in you so we don't make you mad. We are furious. We grieve. Yeah, you could say that we're pissed. You could also say that we're in pain. Some of us have stomach cramps, diarrhea, and vomiting. Some of us have migraine headaches, light sensitivity. Some of us ache in our bones and muscles. Some of us feel shooting pain in our limbs. Some of us have chills. Some of us are on the ground with back spasms. Some of us are eating soup for dinner because our jaws ache from clenching and grinding. We are pissed and we're not sleeping well. If we can fall asleep, we have nightmares. Some of us wake up with our eyelashes crusted from crying unconsciously. We are pissed and crying at the gym while we realize that a thing that we used to do for fun has become a thing that we do to survive. We are pissed and taking another shower. All of these symptoms add up to something that you may never understand. And if you don't understand, you won't be able to imagine. It's not that kind of feeling. The women you know are walking around like they got the flu at a funeral because we are ill and grieving and questioning the meaning of anything at all. The women you know have just been reminded of how many of them live as unmet hands that have been reaching out into space since the moment that divided before and after. They've waited for someone to reach back and say, I care about what happened to you. I will be with you. And what just happened was we had a hearing where everyone talked about Christine Ford's hand. There were motions on what to call that unmet hand. There was an orderly debate about how nice her hand is, how confused her hand must be to be reaching out to these men. And after the whole spectacle in which a woman stood in the middle of the entire fucking world with her hand open asking for someone to say, I care, they voted to leave the hand unmet. They voted to walk away from her. And we know exactly how that feels, so yeah, we're taking it hard. It's fucking humiliating. We are grieving. We are discovering how many people we love won't stand next to us. We are afraid, ashamed, in pain all over our bodies, and it's not even fucking over, not even this round. So yeah, you could say we're pissed. Thank you. And don't you tell anyone the minister said the F word in a room full of people.
Is there a band that can sing a song?
It won't be a real happy show.
I don't want happy. None of us are ready for happy. Well, maybe Roger is. But he's in the minority. you a chair, or do you want a chair behind the arms?
This will be okay. And yeah, we can bring that in.
You want the voice over the instrument?
It's for recording, not for amplification.
Yeah, it's not for amplification.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe you'll hear the instrument. Maybe not. What if, no matter how angry he was, how outraged he was, how furious he was, what if, no matter how angry he was, he couldn't lay hands on a gun? He couldn't lay hands on a gun. What if, no matter how right he was, how wrong they were, how evil they were, what if, no matter how right he was, he couldn't lay hands on a gun? He couldn't lay hands on a gun. No rifle, no shotgun, no pistol in sight. No revolvers, automatics, no assault guns tonight. No clips crammed with bullets anywhere to be found. No weapons just laying around. What if, no matter how outraged he was, how furious he was, how murderous he was, what if, no matter how outraged he was, he couldn't lay hands on a gun? He couldn't lay hands on a gun. If he dug through his Chevy, the backseat, the trunk, the attic, the basement, the piles of old junk, came up empty-handed again and again, tell me, what would he do then? What if, no matter how angry he was, how outraged he was, how furious he was, what if, no matter how angry he was, he couldn't lay hands on a gun? He couldn't lay hands on a gun.
Wow.
Not quite on topic to the hearings going on right now, but it's violent. It's gun violence. I'll do one more if that's okay. This one is about poverty. That was Tom Paxton. This is also Tom Paxton. They're both relatively recent Tom Paxton. We might think of him as a 60s guy, but he's 80, about to be 81 on Halloween, and still performing, still writing, still recording. And this one is about poverty, and it's from 2015. If the kids are hungry, but there's nothing to eat. If the baby has a fever, but there is no heat. If they're living in a Chevy, as the world walks by. If the poor don't matter, then neither do I. If the poor don't matter, if the poor don't matter, if the poor don't matter, then neither do I. If they're living in a cardboard or a packing case, if they're gone by morning and they leave no trace, if nobody wonders if they live or they die, if the poor don't matter, then neither do I. Push them back, sweep them out, anything to keep them out, keep them real branded out, standing with their hands out, knocking at the back gate, radio talking hate, wrong here, strong here, no, they don't belong here, my house, my car, living like a rock star, caviar, wet bar, what another Jaguar, get it all payday, now it's time to play day, trouble not to think about, not to make a stink about, if the people don't matter. If we chase them away, we're gonna see them again, boys, on the judgment day. We're gonna see them again, boys, on the day we die. If the poor don't matter, then neither do I. If the poor don't matter, if the poor don't matter, if the poor don't matter, then neither do I. If the poor don't matter, if the poor don't matter, if the poor don't matter, then neither do I.
Bravo.
I also have to say, I don't have a poem, but when this hearing started, I learned from a Facebook posting by my sister that she was abused by a church member when we were children, and that's about 50 years ago. So none of this is new. Someone's calling me.
Thank you.
And she held it for 50 years. She never talked about it.
Mm-hmm. Someone pointed out the boys talk about the abuse by priests 30 years ago.
Yeah, and
no one
nobody
asks
questions it.
Why did they take so long?
Yeah.
And I prefer songs that do a couple of things. Either they ask us to think a little harder, or they are songs that were at the bottom of Pandora's box. In other words, they're songs for hope, because I don't really believe that any of us will make a difference or see a difference if we can't make room for hope as well. So, that said, I want to share a song. I'll give you the background. It's commonly called the Digger's Song. And here's the background. In 1694, Gerard Winstanley, a Protestant radical and Christian universalist, wrote the comforting thought that in the end, every man shall be saved, though some at the last hour. Winstanley interpreted New Testament teachings as calling for economic equality, and his followers came to be called true levelers for their belief in leveling property rights to achieve this. Winstanley and the true levelers took over common land in several English southern counties around Surrey and began cultivating and distributing crops free of charge, inviting all to come in and help them and promise them meat, drink, and clothes. Because of their actions, they became known as diggers and struck fear into the hearts of landowners who attacked them by hiring gangs to commit personal violence and arson, and later by using the courts and army to disband the groups. This 17th century ballad is credited to Winstanley and was known as Levelers and Diggers, now, as I said, more commonly known as the Digger's Song. And one of the singers that helps keep this particular song alive is Billy Bragg. So, I'm unaccustomed to balancing things in my hand, so. Thank you. In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the law. They were the dispossessed reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the land in common and to make the waste ground grow. This earth divided, we will make whole, so it can be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder, they steal the land. Now everywhere the walls rise up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor folk starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the Lord. Still we are free, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property the order came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim. Tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision carries on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace. The order came to cut them down. Oh. And I'm going to stay in that vein of songs that ask us to just keep on thinking. This is a song written by Ewan McCall, who was born in 1915. He wrote this particular song in 1964. It's known as the Ballad of Accounting. In the morning we built the city. In the afternoon walked through its streets. Evening saw us leaving. We wandered through our days as if they would never end. All of us imagined we had endless time to spend. We hardly saw the crossroads and small attention gave to landmarks on the journey from the cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave. Did you learn to dream in the morning? Abandon dreams in the afternoon. Wait without hope in the evening. Did you stand there in the traces and let them feed you lies? Did you trail along behind them wearing blinders on your eyes? Did you kiss the foot that kicked you? Did you thank them for their scorn? Did you ask for their forgiveness for the act of being born? Act of being born, act of being born. Did you alter the face of the city? Make any change in the world you found? Or did you observe all the warnings? Did you read the trespass notices? Did you keep off the grass? Did you shuffle off the pavement just to let your betters pass? Did you learn to keep your mouth shut? Were you seen and never heard? Did you learn to be obedient and jump to at a word? Jump to at a word, jump to at a word. Did you ever demand any answers? The who and the what and the reason why? Did you ever question the setup? Did you stand aside and let them choose while you took second best? Did you let them skim the cream off and then give to you the rest? Did you settle for the shoddy? And did you think it right to let them rob you right and left and never make a fight, never make a fight, never make a fight? What did you learn in the morning? How much did you know in the afternoon? Were you content in the evening? Did they teach you how to question when you were at the school? Did the factory help you grow? Were you the maker or the tool? Did the place where you were living enrich your life? And then did you reach some understanding of all your fellow men, all your fellow men, all your fellow men? In the morning we built the city. In the afternoon walked through its streets. Evening saw us leaving. That is about counting.